Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray, and I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles tonight, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. Tonight we have what we call an open mic or an open topic show, which is designed to encourage the community to participate. We'd love for you to call in and let us know what's on your mind or during a discussion that we're already having. And I hope that you will be also in our chat room if you wish. Chat rooms are always open during our shows. We always run them on account of we want to encourage the community. And sometimes people are reluctant to come on the air, but they're with us.
Stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. Once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Bill Murray, and I'll be your host this evening. I'm coming to you from Los Angeles tonight, and I am myself an adult survivor of child abuse. Tonight we have what we call an open topic or an open mic show planned. These shows are designed to encourage the community to participate. And what we'd like is for you to call in and let us know what's on your mind or join the discussion that we're already having. And pretty much everything that you can think of that's under the banner of child abuse and trauma, it's prevention, intervention, and recovery are fair game for tonight's show. Plus, we could talk about some of the news that's going on, some of the changes in the laws regarding child abuse issues, and so forth. Anything that's related to child abuse physically, sexually, emotionally, mentally, or through neglect, All of that is fodder for tonight's show, and we would love to hear from you. You can ask us anything you want about the work that we do here at NASCA and any of the programs that we do, or you can ask us about our personal experiences. I'm watching for Carol Levine to call in. She's in the chat room, but she hasn't called in, and I'm frankly a little confused about what's happening with tonight's show. When I started the show, I couldn't tell whether or not we were on the air or not. It appears that we are, but nobody has identified that they can hear me talking, and neither is there anyone else who's called in. So I'm the only one here, and I see Carol Levine, our co-host, in the chat room, but she has not either typed anything in the chat room or called in. So I don't know if she's hearing me, even if this is going out over the air. Carol Levine, of course, is the co-host of our show. She sometimes hosts these shows when I can't be here, and she is the author of Panic Child, a harrowing true story of sexual abuse and neglect. This is an autobiographical work Carol wrote some time ago, which describes how the experiences she had as a youngster and all the molesting that happened to her, but also how it affected her in her adult life. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly, how over 30 years ago now, Carol got into her own recovery and on her own journey of recovery, as she said, the healing journey. by attending a prayer group in her local church. She's been consistently on her journey for over 30 years now. Carol is also very active in the local community where she lives in Northwest New Jersey. She often speaks to groups of different sizes, both there and in Northeast Pennsylvania, sometimes to college students, and carries the message, tries to educate the public on the issues of child abuse as well. I'm watching again for Carol to anybody to type anything in the chat room or to call in, and that would be very helpful. I don't see any indication that my voice is even being heard on the air tonight, and it was it took quite a while for the music to play, even though it seemed like it had been playing. I don't understand what's going on. I need some help from somebody who can call in or be in the chat room and tell me if they can even hear the show, because I can't tell if I'm on the air or not. And maybe you can put your headset on and log in and tell me if you even hear me, because I don't know if we're going over the air or not. I see Carol Levine, as I say, the only person I do see in the chat room, but her name is there and she hasn't typed yet. So I don't know if she's actually really there, apparently not, and I don't know if she's actually hearing me, and probably not. So I'm going to ask Chris Brazil to log into the show, and when she's in there, she'll be able to tell me whether or not I'm even on the air, or whether or not she can get in the chat room, or whether she can call in too. Because right now I can't tell if I'm even going over the airwaves or if the show is being recorded. Carol Levine, of course, is with us every night, and she knows the software very well. She herself runs it. When I can't be here, she hosts the show. And so she's familiar with the software. And Chris Brazil is frequently the person that monitors our chat room. And although she's in there now. What I'd like her to do is to type in the chat room herself if she can, and then and type if she can hear me on the air or not, because she uses a headset to listen to the show. So, Chris, can you hear me? And just type yes or no in the chat room if you can. I'm watching. Okay, you hear me well. Okay, good. Well, that means that we're on the air. That's what I needed to know. So Chris is in the chat room, and I'm in the chat room, and Carol's name is in the chat room, and apparently the show is going on. I don't know why no one else has called in yet or can call in. Perhaps there's a problem with that part of it. I don't know. But I will go ahead and just explain that the NASCA organization, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, was created out of my own desire to use my story, and this is a typical desire of a lot of people in recovery. I had a desire to use my story by way of taking advantage of the fact that I had a terrible experience for myself, but having recovered from it, perhaps by being willing to tell my story, I could help other people avoid pain and the suffering that they are going through themselves, especially people who don't know that recovery is even possible. And you might be amazed to hear, but there are lots of people out there who are keeping the secret of their abuse in their childhood, and some of them have kept it for years and years and years. Some will, of course, never reveal it, never talk about it in a healthy environment, and therefore will suffer because of it, even though they're in their adulthood now, and it could be decades and decades since they were abused. But when I was molested, it was when I was a youngster, prepubescent youngster, starting in my case at age 11. And for the next several years, I was the subject of sexual assault by numerous people, all men, many of who were priests and brothers. And that molestation, as I say, went on through the middle, at least through the middle of high school. And when I got into college, I left the place behind where I'd gone to high school, and I discovered alcohol. And like a lot of us, we find an inappropriate path that really we're trying to find a solution for how we feel about ourselves. And I engaged in this path of drinking and using drugs for the next 10 or 12 years. Around age 30, I finally did decide that I needed to deal with the drinking problem. I didn't think about dealing with the secret that I had been holding on to, but the drinking problem I had recognized was interfering in some ways with my life. So I eventually went to a 12-step program, Alcoholics Anonymous, for help for my drinking. And while I was there, I heard them use the expression that we are as sick as our secrets, what they said. And I certainly knew what the secret of my life was. And so I became willing to reveal in small pieces at first what had happened to me as a youngster, and a little bit at a time to let the story out. And I was afraid that I was going to be asked to do that somewhere else, so leave the meeting, because the meetings of AA back then were pretty much all about drinking, and they didn't want to hear about any other part of your life. The elders in my group, fortunately, understood that this was an important thing for me to talk about, and although they didn't understand it themselves, they did tell me that it's possible that there are other people coming in after you who need to hear what you're talking about. And because it's obvious you did a lot of your drinking behind the story of your abuse as a youngster, then we will let you talk about it. So they let me talk about my child abuse. And this was in 1984, so it's 30 years ago. And ever since then, I have been not only using the 12-step program to stay clean and sober, which I've done consistently since then, but also applied the same program to the issues of child abuse that I was going through. And because I came to understand that the 12 steps are really they're not a recovery program so much as they're a design for living. There's a process there that you go through, but in the end, you incorporate these things into your life, and it's kind of a lifestyle, a spiritual lifestyle, but a way of living. And the design for living in Alcoholics Anonymous works so well, not only in AA, but in other aspects, that it's been borrowed by about 50 other groups who modified to accommodate the problem that they're addressing. For example, overeating. Overeaters Anonymous is a 12-step program that's identical in format to the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, where the 12 steps read, instead of saying the word alcohol, it says the word food, because people who are in Overeaters Anonymous have a problem with their intake of food, and they use food in an obsessive way, just like a drug addict might use drugs, or a gambler might use gambling, or a workaholic might use workaholism, or someone who didn't know how to spend money would become a debtor and a constant debtor, or someone would overuse sex and become a sexaholic. There's a program called Sexaholics Anonymous. In any case, the point is that in all these cases, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can be applied, because it's a design for living that involves surrendering to the fact that you have a problem, first of all, recognizing that you need to ask for help, finding in a pure sense, a 12-step program sense, a higher power, which can be the group itself that can help you restore your sanity, it says. And then talking about writing out an inventory of the things that were good and bad about yourself, discussing that with someone else, coming up with a list of people who you'd harm, making amends to them, continuing to take personal inventory, using prayer and meditation to increase your conscious contact, and also to then go out and use the 12-step program to carry, to be of service to other alcoholics, or to have the other drug addicts, or to other sexaholics, or to other overeaters, whatever it is. Carol just tried to speak to call me on my phone, and I can't tell you what I'll do is I will add. Carol, you're with me now?
Yes, I am. You're having problems. There's a blog talk. Something's going on here.
I appreciate your calling in this way. So you and I are now on a conference call, even though I'm the only call that seems to be able to connect. We'll be able to do our show like this.
I'm sorry I took so long in trying, but I was determined, you know how I am. So it took me 15 minutes, but I kept thinking, you know, that it would work, and it didn't. So, okay, I'm here now.
That's okay. At first, I couldn't even tell if I was really on the air or not. And I had, fortunately, Chris was here with me, and she went in the show and was able to tell me that she could hear me, so at least I knew I was on the air. But there was no other way to tell, because you were in the chat room but weren't responding. Your name was in there, and no one else had called in. So,
you know, also, too, it won't accept me in Blog Talk right now either.
All right. Well, there might be a problem with the Blog Talk system tonight. We're not shocked if there is. I'll tell you the truth, though, Blog Talk has gotten a lot better in the many years now. We've done this show, what is it, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
5 years ago when we first started it, it was pretty funky. Of course, we didn't do it for NASCA back then. We did it for the community policing site. And the first few shows that we did, there were regular crashes and problems, and the quality was horrible, the audio quality, and it was all software problems on the end of Blog Talk. We had to hang in there along with other hosts in order to get to the place we're at now. And this is unusual, is the point.
Yeah, because we've really been doing well for quite some time now, so I'm a little surprised, too. And then I was getting mad. But,
well, yeah, we pay for this. I mean, it is a service. You know, this is not something, we're not doing it for them. We're paying them. They work for us, you know.
I know.
And so, you know, you obviously expect good service. I know that there can be occasional problems, but it should be consistently at a certain quality that you'd come to expect. And it has been, to be honest. But it's gotten better, but it's not perfect. I don't know what's going on with them. They sometimes do send me a notice during the show that shows up in this, you know, on my switchboard. They haven't done so tonight, so I was, you know, in a quandary as to what was going on at all. But anyway, fortunately, we don't have a guest tonight, and it is an open topic night. So you and I can just talk about anything we want.
Yes, too, my gosh. You know, see, I'm on the page here. See, I'm a little bit confused with this because now they let me sign in, and I just want to mess with this a little bit.
Well, I hope other people will continue to try to call in, too. Chris was able to connect to the show and is in the chat room. And she is hearing the show on her headset.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I knew the show was going out over the air and my voice was being heard.
Yeah. Well, that's all right, Bill. You know, all right, now it's not showing Carol and Bill before it did. And that's as far as I could get, and I kept trying to call. Now it's just connecting, and the skin isn't coming on. There's no way that it's going to allow for me to come on. But that's okay. We can talk anyway.
Actually, because we're on the same line, there isn't the delay that you have with other people. And when you're on the same line, you can actually overlap each other's voices and it doesn't cut out the other person. It's more natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really talking to you. You sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but that's all right. You know, today is just one of those crazy days. I had it was a strange day, and so this just puts the icing on the cake. That's all.
Well, I'll report that in our lives here, Christina, who a lot of people know, had an accident several weeks ago, has finally gone back to work, and she was working hard today. I know she did several hours worth of work today, and she's got a helper with her, so she doesn't have to spend as much energy, but she's still working hard. So anyway, things are getting back to normal in that sense for her and for us here, because she really hurt herself.
Oh, she hurt herself
6 weeks ago.
I felt really bad for her, and that must have been very scary at first too, because you know the liver is the liver. It's like the heart is the heart, you know, and you can break a leg or an arm. That's one thing. Not that that's good, but when it's something major like that, that is something to be concerned about. So there was a lot of people that were saying prayers for her.
Yes.
Wishing her the best, you know. A very
well, it worked, so we appreciate it, believe me.
Yeah. Well, I do have a few articles here.
Okay, let's talk about some of them.
Yeah, and we'll just go into whatever happens, okay? You know, I'm always talking about the economy, and not too much in depth because we're not really a political program or anything like that. But, of course, it is causing an awful lot of hardships for a lot of people, okay?
Right.
So now it's gotten to the point because the daycare centers, they charge a lot of money. Over the years, I didn't realize how expensive they've gotten, okay? And you have to have a pretty darn good job. Well, you can't afford them. You just simply
right.
can't. So there was this lady here in South Carolina, and she was arrested after her 9-year-old daughter was found playing alone while she was at work. She was unsupervised. She was at a playground. Now, the mother works at McDonald's. And it was on the line a couple days ago, but we didn't get a chance to speak about it. But I have a few things here that I didn't, you know, touch, so I can use it tonight. It was found unsupervised, and I guess an adult asked her, well, why are you here? You know, where's your
mother?
You
mean this is like a public park? Not
yes.
the McDonald's park, it's a public park?
Wow, this is a playground park, yes. Not
yeah.
Not the Mickey D's. She would have been better off if her child had been in the McDonald's playground area.
Yeah.
If they had one. Not all of them have them, though, Bill. Okay?
No, right.
So maybe the park was across the street. It didn't say, but she was at the playground, or as they word it. And so, of course, the police were called and all this other stuff because she was only 9 years old, is only 9 years old. Now, she was charged at first and with child neglect, and it was considered there a felony. And a growing number of women choose to stay home because of child care costs. This is terrible.
Sure.
And it says 8% of 9 to 11-year-olds are found to be alone today. 8%. 27% of 12 to 14-year-olds are left unsupervised. Now, that's
wow.
the census, yes. And that's from actually 2012, I believe. It says 2012. So, now, this lady had they arrested her and all kinds of things. And I think the judge is going to go a little softer on her now. There's people that are writing letters and all kinds of things. And at first they said she lost her job at McDonald's. And McDonald's, if they had fired her, decided to hire her back real quick because the economy is so bad. But she's going to have to do either one of two things. Either she's going to have to find a babysitter. All right, forget the daycare centers. Go to find a babysitter or someone, you know. Or she's going to have to quit. So in that article that I had read, I don't have the rest of my papers with me because I didn't think I was going to use them tonight, but in that article I remember it saying that a lot of women are actually choosing to stay home because they can't afford the child daycare centers.
Well, I don't think they can. They can't make a choice. It's not a choice. They either take care of their child or they don't, and that's not a choice, you know.
No.
You need to take care of your child.
Yeah.
Remember we talked about several weeks ago about these small groups of children that you could privately have in a setting like in your own home. You could have a limited number of them in your own home. You could make
mm-hmm.
a little business out of that.
Right.
Have kids in from the neighborhood. Well, that seems to me like the best answer to in a lot of these cases, because, you know, it's not as expensive to take somebody to a neighbor's, in effect, house where there are a bunch of kids that are going to be watched by one woman, and that's her job, you know, or two women, and the rest of the women then are freed up to go do regular work or go to school or whatever they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, but
well,
I understand. I mean, you and I are... We're beyond the place where we have to worry about our kids, the cost of our kids in daycare. They're all out of it, but in today's world, this is a big problem. I didn't know that the percentage was that high of kids being at home by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's terrible. I was, but that was not normal, and that was way back when. You know, it's funny because I remember from that article, and that wasn't a good thing, people, don't do that to your children, because believe me, when they come home, they need to have someone to greet them, whether it be a parent or a babysitter or a daycare center, whatever the case might be, or aftercare. For the older ones, it's usually called aftercare. But the point is that, you know, the people today are in such a mess that they don't know what to do. And sometimes even with both parents working, Bill, it's still not enough money. And I read also, too, that the food banks, they have they used to have designated areas for people who would open up their garages.
Yeah.
At least that's the way it is around in this area, okay?
Okay.
And they would give it, you know, people had to show a stub of some sort, which they would get, you know, from welfare or whatever they're a part of, the WIC program, say. I don't know if you're familiar with the WIC program.
Yes.
Yeah. And they would show a little something so they weren't just someone off the street. But
right.
They would give them all their staples. You know, the staple
right.
foods like, and the toilet paper, the things that welfare evidently doesn't cover. You know, they don't believe in toilet paper and soap and stuff like that. So, you know, now it's gotten to the point that the food banks, many of the food banks are empty. This is very sad. This is how bad the economy is. People are not giving money like they used to. They're just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's very sad because I know, like with ShopRite, we have a ShopRite out here. You're familiar with ShopRite.
Yes.
Maybe other people aren't.
The grocery store chain, sure.
Yeah. I know that ShopRite and a couple of the others have they work together with these food banks. And if you like giving them, say, like $10, we'll say someone gives them $10 as a donation at these food banks, that'll buy maybe $40 worth of food. You see, they work with them,
mm-hmm.
okay? And and then that'll be on the shelves. And it might be pastas and you know, jarred sauces, but it's food, you know, come on, and vegetables and all that other stuff. I gave them a donation, a rather large one, and they sent me a letter. I did that last Christmas time, I guess it was. But, you know, once a year isn't enough because there's so many people now that that need that help. So these people, a lot of times the mother and the father work. Neither one of them are making enough. Like if you work at Walmart, I don't think you work a 40-hour week. I know you don't. I think you work much less than that. And then they don't give you benefits. There's all kinds of things going on in this country. And maybe the mother works at, we'll say, at McDonald's. Well, between the two, they don't make enough, and they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked, you know, for these food banks and so forth. So if they can't afford aftercare, or if the children are younger, the daycare, a lot of the women are staying home now because it just doesn't pay.
It's amazing, though, that it's amazing how many are affected and how many kids are affected. You know,
yeah.
The WIC program, for example, you asked me about it. I know that what that is for, it's for, you know, the new mothers with infants, mm-hmm. to make sure that, you know, I think the W stands for women and infant,
yeah.
I stands for infant, and I don't know what the C stands for, care or something, or children, women,
yeah.
infant, and children. And basically it is a program by which you get just the staples and only certain staples, but it includes things like milk and bread, you know, really staple things. But not everything. And then, you know, if in order to fill in with other stuff, you have to have another source of income. That's not enough, you know. Plus, I think after your child is a certain age, you're no longer eligible for it because it really is to support new mothers and their young children.
That's right.
So
yeah, that's the WIC program. That's right.
That's the WIC program, right?
And so it's very bad. Now I do know that there's several places over here. Last year there were three places that stayed open at noontime. Well,
mm-hmm.
11 to 1,
mm-hmm.
so the children could go and get lunches at least. Now this year there's only two places open because again of the economy. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of these kids, they need that lunch, for God's sake, you know,
mm-hmm.
that they were counting on it and the parents were counting on it. So it's very sad, Bill, you know. So when I saw this article a few days ago, I felt really bad because I don't know if they had a playground there at Mickey D's, like they have those, you know, little slides and stuff where they go up and down or whatever. But maybe she was a little negligent in the sense that maybe the park wasn't right across the street, okay? But on the other hand, this is what's happening. And when the stats say that 27% of children up to the age of 14 are being left alone, okay, 12 to 14 years old, 27%, that's staggering, and 8% of the 9 to 11.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's bad. Yeah. So that upset me because I know what it's like to come home and not have anybody there. It doesn't feel good. Yeah, it doesn't feel good at all. So then I have another one here.
All right.
And here's a man, a father, who caught his caught an 18-year-old boy, young man. You're not grown up when you're 18 yet. I have trouble with that. But, okay, an 18-year-old young man sexually abusing his 11-year-old son, okay? He walked in on it. Mm-hmm. And he went ballistic, and he beat the living daylights, in plain English, out of this old kid.
Uh-oh.
You bet. And he just kept beating him and beating him and beating him. And the 11-year-old, he went for a knife. I think he was going to, I'm going to forget, there's somebody trying to beep through, but I'm not going to break this up. No. But anyway, the 11-year-old actually stopped him. He was able to stop him because I think the father would have killed him.
Wow.
So he said that the son is the real hero there because he stopped him from murdering this 18-year-old kid. So no charges. After the police were called, and actually the father himself called the police, no charges were held against him, even though he beat this kid, you know, senselessly, this 18-year-old young man. And but, of course, the abuser is facing charges of sexual battery of a child. And then come to find out, he found out later on, that this has been going on for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a once or twice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once is too much, but it had been going on for quite some time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's no way to handle your frustrations and your problems in your family.
No, it isn't.
It's sad how many kids get beaten. There's so much frustration out there and so much anger out there, and for a lot of people, it's just easier to come up with that simple answer. You know, try to beat some sense into your kid.
Well, the 18-year-old was not his child. Okay, the 18-year-old was the one that was the abuser. The 11-year-old was his child, and when he walked into the house, he'd come in from work, and his child, 11-year-old's pants were down by his ankle as well. He said another word had to be said, or another one, not a word needed to be said. He could see what was going on. He caught them in the act.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of calling the police to begin with, he just pounced this 18-year-old and beat the living daylights out of him. And there had been a picture of him online. It's a couple days ago now. And, boy, he did a job on him. You bet he did. Yes, mm-hmm. he did. So, but what I tell people out there, I know how you feel. When my uncle, I've had quite a few people abuse me sexually. My uncle was the first one. And no one beat him up when they found out after a year and a half he had, you know, been molesting me. But he went to the girl next door, and he started to molest her, and her father realized what was going on. Now, he beat the living daylights out of my uncle, and he ran down to Florida when he recuperated. But the best thing to do is to call the cops, and the reason being is we want these people off the street. You see, if you beat someone up, and we all feel like doing that, if we catch them touching our child or any child, I mean, that's just, you know, something that sparks in us,
mm-hmm.
Especially if it's our child, though, you know, it doesn't solve anything because the person can take off.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues on, you know, whether it be he or she, continues on, you know, being, you know, a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're talking about here. So, I mean, I felt a little bit of satisfaction, Bill, when I found that out. He waited a while after I told on him, but not too long, and then he went to the neighbor girl, that he had gotten hit, that he did hurt, okay? Because we that are survivors, we know what that feels like. We know what it's like, to be abused, okay? And so I did feel a little bit of satisfaction, but you see, that didn't solve the problem. That didn't solve the problem. Because he was able to take off down Florida, and, and God knows how many more kids he touched, he abused.
Right.
So people out there, hold your anger, and do the right thing.
And we do want to point out that, pedophiles don't have one victim. They have multiple victims. Abusers have, it's not unusual for an abuser to have 100 victims in the course of their lifetime of abusing people, 100 different people. The average is 78, according to the Center for Disease Control. But that means there are plenty of us who are being abused by people who have had maybe a couple hundred victims in their career, as a pedophile, as a molester. This is the size of the problem that people don't understand. We think that when we hear these single stories, that we're covering the issue, and we're catching a lot of these bad guys, and we're really not. We're catching the tip of the iceberg, as I always say. In terms of how many are out there and how they operate with impunity. It's really hard to catch them. And and there is a whole society of them, and they know each other, and they've helped to protect each other, and they have no feelings about what they're doing to the children.
No.
None.
They have no remorse, Bill.
No remorse.
I'm afraid to have to say this, but I'll bet you that I can't give specifics on this as far as percentages. But look, I don't think any of them ever, go and say, I'm sorry afterwards or feel remorse. I mean, I've never known of anyone. I'm not going to say that there isn't a few.
I've never heard that either. I have heard, on the other hand, a lot of them say, if you let me out tomorrow, I will molest again. A lot of them say that.
That's what I hear too.
When they're honest about it, that's how insidious this problem is. There isn't any recovery from it. There's no fix for it. We don't know as a society what to do about it, so we just, we put these guys away.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, they earn the right, through parole systems and so forth, to come back out, and they're all telling us, if you let me out, I will molest again.
And they will.
And they're honest about it. They're frank about it.
Yeah.
It's such a compulsion that they can't control.
I've watched a couple of shows on TV. I mean, I actually just ran into them. I didn't even know they were on.
Yeah.
And so I'd see it, halfway through or whatever. One I saw most of. And questions were actually being asked like that. And one guy said, I wouldn't trust me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what they'll say. That's right.
Yeah. So that tells you how much of a problem it is.
Let me give a little plug to a show that I'm going to be on tomorrow, which I've done some studying about, and I'll talk a little bit tonight about the studying I've done, because a lot of people will be interested in this, but Jillian, who has been the Australian gal, Jillian, who has been with us before, and she's been our guest, and I've been a guest on her show. She wants me to appear regularly on her talk show, which I'm happy to do. And it's going to be on Friday afternoons in front of our show,
at 3 o'clock
my time, so that's 2 hours ahead of our show.
Mm-hmm.
And in any case, we're going to pick topics that she wants me to, discuss. And this week, she asked me if I would be willing to study a little bit about the Kinsey report, and also about female pedophilia. So anyway, I've done that, and because of that, I'm especially informed about the previous one, the former, the Kinsey report, which, of course, if for anyone who doesn't know, was a report that was done beginning in the 40s by a scientist who, out of Indiana University, I think it was, had been doing studies with, I think they're called tsetse flies, and he realized that all the tsetse flies that he discovered, that he had studied, and there were hundreds of thousands of them over the years, none of them were identical. And because of that, it led him to believe that maybe there was something that could be learned about human sexuality, that maybe it wasn't all a certain way that we'd all believed, or that society believed, that maybe there were variations on it. And he began testing this theory by coming up with questionnaires that he eventually gave out to thousands of people. And they asked on these questionnaires all kinds of questions about the person's sexual experience. Well, the result of this was, just in really broad strokes, in the 50s, he came out with a first book that talked about the appetite of the male, you know, and the patterns of the male behavior. And then a few years later, he did a second book about female behavior. And it was extremely controversial. Both of them were extremely controversial because people couldn't believe some of the statistics he'd come up with, how many variations there were on sexuality and so forth. But the whole area that Jillian's most upset about is because he used his studies of young children's sexuality as a basis for saying that children, it's okay to sexualize children from the youngest of ages. Now, the reason that's so controversial is because his study group that he used to do this was a very small number of people, and they were all pedophiles. Mm-hmm. So there was no control group, and there were very few of them. So, and they were all obviously people who were engaged in sex with kids, or else how would they know how to answer the questions?
Right.
And she said that it's still today is you can trace back, among other things, the whole sexual liberation that we went through as youngsters and so forth is directly related to the Kinsey report and so forth. And that's one thing. But the whole thing about children and sexuality this report has been used over and over again by people like the NAMBLA organization, the Man Boy Love Association, as proof that children are not damaged in giving them sexual experiences at very young ages. Now, of course, in our world, no matter what you do sexually with a child, it's illegal. So right there, there's a reason to obviously not do it. We agree as a society that that children are not to be approached sexually. Every sex act with a child is an illegal act. There's no such thing as a legal act of having sex with a child, in other words. Yet these societies are used to studies and bend the results of his studies around quite a bit as proof that it's not only okay to have sex with children, but preferable, because after all, you're helping them have their earliest sexual experiences. It's pretty amazing that people are doing this even today. Well, that's the subject she wants to talk about tomorrow. So I'm gonna have to do a little more studying on it before I'm as knowledgeable as I'd like to be. But that's the kind of topic she likes to cover.
Well, I think that's very, I like that. Oh, there goes my voice. I like that, Bill. I think we need to have more studies like that and even more conversations like that. I mean, there is no way on this God's green earth that, excuse me, it's okay to have, you know, sex with kids at such an early age. It's disgusting. It's deplorable. And it does damage the child. And, you know, we've come a long way since then. You know, we have.
Well, unfortunately, you know, his study group consisted of, some people think as few as a couple of men, couple men. Some people think his study, because he did not allow the actual materials that went into the study to be examined. The results of the study is what, you know, came out, but not the materials that were used to create the study, to create the results. So nobody's ever really been able to look as closely as some people would really like to look, but they glean from some of the conversations that have been had in the subsequent years by people that were doing research with him and so forth, and that there could have been as few as only a couple pedophiles, one of which was a fellow who had hundreds of encounters with children over like a 40-year pedophile career, and he used a stopwatch by way of timing how long it took to arouse a child and so forth, and how many times he could, and he kept basically scientific studies, and because he had kept such careful scientific studies, you know, they used the weight of his single amount of research, you know, took over, compensated for the fact that it's difficult to find people who are willing to talk to you openly about sexuality with children, and you can't find any who aren't, by definition, pedophiles. That's what they are.
Well, you know, it's a disgusting thing, and I know they did all kinds of things back then. It's just like with the, what was it, Masters and Johnson? Is that the name I'm thinking of? They were trying to, with women, trying to understand, you know, the sexuality of women. And they actually had women come in and study them. They would give them things like like dildos, and then try to turn them on and so forth to try to understand, you know, a woman's orgasm, if she could have one. And they even have a show on TV. It's one of those silly shows that they have on, and it's I think it's called Masters, whatever. And I know Marty's watching it, but you know, people are so interested in sex and how it stimulates the body, how to stimulate the body. But let me tell you something. When it comes to children, that's just plain a crime. That's a crime. And
right.
What they were doing back then, I don't care what scientific thing they had in mind in their heads, okay? I remember, and you remember, the very first time we were touched, I stiffened.
Yep.
I stiffened.
Too.
Yeah.
Me too.
And there's just no way on this God's green earth, like I said before, that that it's right to involve children and make them guinea pigs.
Right.
You know, so what you're talking about tomorrow, boy, I'd be mad. I'd be really mad with that. Try to find out as much as you can about that, because that's good for discussion.
I will. There are a couple of charts in the Kinsey research that are particularly pertinent. I think they're called charts 34 and 33 or something like that. Because they deal with the sexuality of children. And in these charts, they break down children by age, and they start at infancy, and they go up through, you know, several months old and 1 year old and 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, and all the way up. And they try and relate, you know, according to, I guess, the data they had available, how frequently a child could be brought to orgasm within an hour, for example. And that's in the chart.
Yeah. That's
I mean,
horrible.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
It's the wrong stuff to study, you know.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. But
on the other hand, I got to tell you, though, on the other hand, child, to be fair, Jillian sent me a link to a 2.5-hour documentary, which I watched last night, and I will watch it again tomorrow. before
right.
I appear on the show.
Right.
And it's all about this. And it takes a very negative perspective on the Kinsey reports and what it's done to American sexuality, or just sexuality, period. And I don't agree with everything that the report, that the documentary says. It's mostly from the perspective of a single doctoral woman who has become an expert, and she does a lot of testifying in courts for the Justice Department and the FBI and things like that. And she is the main spokesperson against, you know, the Kinsey report in this documentary. But among other things that she talks about are how wrong it is to teach children about sex and body protection and things like that from a young age. And I don't agree with that at all. I do agree that you have to be careful at what age you introduce what items. And in her case, she showed they showed on the documentary several clips, and they used the same clip over and over again, actually, of a set of fingers in the foreground where apparently a condom had been placed over a set of fingers, and it was like a teacher's fingers. And you weren't seeing the teacher, you were seeing the condom, and in the background, you were seeing small children sitting on the floor with their mouths open. But I mean small children.
Mm.
And I agree, that's too early to show that to that group. But it's not too early to talk about their rights to their privacy or their bodies, how someday, you know, the sex will mean something different, but now it's not, it's not appropriate, and so whatever. You have to be giving, this is why I'm so interested in whatever is the result of the Aaron Marin's law curriculum.
Right.
That is so important for me to see whether or not how to really express how I feel about kind of the result of her going around the country and arguing to legislators that it ought to be taught in school. I agree, it ought to be taught in school, but I also believe that you have to be really careful what you're teaching when, and it has to be age appropriate. You know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, you there's no reason not to tell children, we already do, about stranger danger early on.
Absolutely.
And how to respond if someone tries to, you know, take them away, you know, put them in a car, convince them to help them look for their lost puppy and so forth, and all these things. That stuff should be taught really early.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to say why. You know, until they're a little older. And once they are a little older, you do have to start saying why. And you have to use the language that they can understand, you know, that as well. Go ahead.
Well, that's why it's so important to get across to these parents, to parents, and hopefully they're not the ones that are the abusers, all right, the children need to be educated. And if they're not educated themselves, then by God, they should get educated so they can help their children so they don't become a victim. They have to get over being afraid. Oh, I don't want to say that word or this word because it may sound dirty to them. Vagina, penis, breast, come on. We all have it. Anal area, come on. The children are no different that way than the adults, unless there's something
else.
Well,
I do feel that when by the time a child is in the middle school age in our society, they need to be taught about condoms. That's when they need to be taught about it because they're sexually active at
Absolutely.
That age. And
yeah.
we may not want to hear it. And it's not about, you know, adults having sex with them. They're having sex with each other by that point. And, you know, we need to accept that. So we need to know that by the time they hit middle school, that's when they should be presented with, discussion about, you know, STDs and wearing of condoms and birth control even and so forth. They need to be taught that then. But in order to get them to that point, you have to have talked earlier about what sex is. Even when they're not sexually active, they need to be taught that, you know, that the sex act is the method that we bring other children into the world, for example. They need to know that. They need to know that their bodies, if they're a female, are different than a male's, and the male's different than a female's, and they need to be needs to be explained to them, and maybe diagrammed, you know, not shown an example, but diagrammed, you know. And anyway, as long as it's age appropriate, we need to be doing this for kids.
I think it's negligent at this point, Bill.
In our society.
Yes, it is. Because, you know, a lot of kids are like, who aren't sexually abused, thank God. There's kids out there who aren't sexually abused, but they find out about it, about sex on the playground. Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Yep. Yeah. And you get bits and pieces. You don't get the right information. A lot of times you don't, because the kids that tell you, they don't know any better than you do, hardly. And, people have to understand that this is saving their children's lives in many, many cases. It's not just stranger danger. Sure, it's good to let your children know about stranger danger. But, you know, most of the time, the predators out there are people that we know, love, and trust for the children.
Right. That's right.
At the time. And mm-hmm. It's just so, it's so terribly important, Bill, that people get those stats. And I'm glad you're on that radio station. I'm going to go on WRNJ because school's starting again soon. And I'm going to go closer to the city. I told you that soon after that. Because they're mandated reporters. And, okay, all right, a lot of times you don't see sexual abuse. You don't see it because the clothing is covering it. You do see physical abuse. You'll see bruising and maybe kids wearing long sleeves when they still should be wearing short sleeves because it's so hot out when they start school and things like that. But when it comes to the sexual abuse, everyone has to be much more educated as to what signs to look for. So we have to get out there and speak to the parents. Darkness to Light tries very hard to get parents involved. Where they will actually find groups in their area. If they look up Darkness to Light, they'll find groups in their area where they try to, get people to come and they talk to them, educate them, so that they can educate their children. Because
right.
Parents don't know how to talk and speak to their children, you know, about pedophiles and about sexual abuse and things
right.
like that. You know, and the boundaries. Now, one thing I have against Planned Parenthood, you probably saw it on the news. I don't know if you did or not. But a few days ago with Planned Parenthood, it showed a lady who is now no longer there. She supposedly was a nurse in this Planned Parenthood. And she was speaking to a 15-year-old who had gone in there to ask questions and also, of course, to, I guess, get birth control pills and so forth. But she was telling her very, very specific things about ways, positions to feel better, ways to have sex. The masso, what do you call it, where we hit each other with chains and belts? some people like that. She was
sadomasochism, yeah.
Yes, yeah. To this 15-year-old. Come on. What kind of a person does that? The kid probably didn't even know about such a thing. I couldn't even say it at first. So why educate a child even about that? So it all came out. I mean, it was about everything you could think of with all kinds of ways to have sex.
Let me ask you this. At what age would you teach that?
Not at 15. I would.
Okay, I'm asking you what.
I'm thinking, Bill. Well, it's okay to talk to kids, younger kids, about sex, but not the ways to have sex that's maybe pleasurable to them. To try all different types of.
I'm not holding you to this. I'm just saying that what I am saying is I'm being a devil's advocate here.
I know you are.
I'm saying that at some point. You need to add those. That is a valid discussion to have with a young person, whatever age you're going to choose. It'll be a specific age. Maybe 15 is too young. Maybe 16 is not. I don't know. Maybe 18 is too old. You've lost your opportunity by then. So somewhere in there, though, you have to talk in real terms. See, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No.
That's the problem that I have with this documentary. Is that there's an awful lot of good, and I'm putting quotation marks around the term good, that came out of the Kinsey reports, because we are so prudish in our society and nobody had ever looked at this before, it was a good thing that somebody did it, you know, and that it was an ongoing project, was taken seriously. Now, they may have gone down some roads that, that people are uncomfortable with, and I understand that, but that's, you don't throw all of their study out with that, you know. So, in this case, at some point, a child needs to be, let's say, a child needs to have homosexuality explained to them. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay? Now, when do you do that? You know, parents are mostly uncomfortable with that whole topic, so they don't want you, you don't want you to ever teach your child that. Or they want you to wait until they're married. You know, it's too late then.
Wasn't it MJ said her mother started talking to her about sex after she had second child or something like that? Oh, my God. That is
so, you
so
know, but you,
funny.
But at some point, there are things that are, I know they're uncomfortable for society to express, and that's why they need to be taught in school, and they need to be taught correctly and age appropriately. And you need to be able to cross, you know, some uncomfortable lines for the, like, you know, like, and some of them are biological, and some of them are social, you know, and some of them are psychosexual, you know. And it is true that there are a group of people who find, you know, pleasure in sadomasochistic, you know, endeavors. And that they're a minority group, but there are some people that do that. That has to you have to say that at some point to somebody. You know, there are a certain percentage of us who apparently, from my understanding, you know, are gay. We're gay or lesbian by how we grew up. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but there's just a certain percentage. It doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It just means that there's a certain percentage, and maybe if by telling kids this early enough, but not too early, we can help resolve some of the, you know, some kids grow up being very confused about their sexuality. They because nobody's ever told them that it's okay if you're gay, you know.
Yeah.
And they think it's not okay, and they struggle against it, you know, until they leave their family and they go off. And some of them are in denial about it, you know, and they get married and they have families, and then they admit it. You know, well, we don't do that anymore. Well, I don't know if we do or not, but the point is that that's another thing you have to at some point address with a child.
Oh, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But when you start asking me ages, boy, that takes me back a little bit. Because, I don't think, first of all, I think that lady went too far, and obviously everybody else does too, but she doesn't have the job anymore, okay? She got fired. It wasn't appropriate. You know, for her to tell her as much information as she gave her. Okay,
right.
I don't think so.
Okay.
The kid was asking some questions. Well, she said, you know, my boyfriend wants to mess around, and so then they started talking about positions. Okay, maybe, all right. I don't know if that's really her job. Her job is to whatever type of, you know, exam they give them, which isn't too much. You know, unless they're going to have an abortion, for God's sake, and all that other stuff, and give them the pills and you know, on the other side. But to go into such vivid detail about all kinds of sex that you can have that people consider to be pleasurable or can be pleasurable, I think she went too far. Yes, she did. With a 15-year-old, I believe that the kid is.
And I probably agree with that, but I'd also say that that's why I want to see this curriculum, because you have to address all these issues at some point. And the problem is, at what point? You know, when is too young, and when is not? You know, is too late? You know, to talk to somebody about birth control when they're 18 is too late.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yeah,
of course.
But it might be uncomfortable for you to talk about birth control when they're 12, right? Somewhere
right.
In the middle there is the right place to put it. And it has to be, it should be at an age when it becomes relevant to them. And what I'm saying is there are so many kids who are sexually active in junior high nowadays
Yeah.
That you need to have had the discussion about condoms and about birth control and about options and about, you know, you need to be well into discussions of sexuality by then.
You absolutely do. Now,
yeah.
Bill, when we were 12 years old, we weren't sexually active. I mean, you know, we were being abused. But, I mean, let's say we were normal kids and came from a normal home, okay?
Yeah.
I don't know of any kids that were actually sexually active way back when at the age of 11 or 12 years old. I just simply don't, okay?
Well, I don't either. I mean, except for those that were being, you know, that were being sexualized by perverts.
Right.
You know? Not with each other. And that's
no.
the difference. You know,
it was such a different time. It really was. I mean, you know.
Yeah. But
I mean,
if you
could run down the street by yourself, okay, in those days. I'm not saying that the perverts weren't out there. Don't get me wrong. But there was so much more. We've spoken before about how we would go over to someone's house, have a sandwich, and if the mother got mad at you, you know, the kid's mother got mad at you, but by the time you got home, your mother knew about it because they were calling back and forth. And, you know, things were different, okay? I'm not saying that, you know, pedophiles didn't exist. They've existed since the beginning of time, for God's sake. But it's just like there's so much of it. There's just so much of it today. Okay, I don't know if the numbers were the same back then and we didn't know any better, and there was a lot of kids who were a lot luckier than so many of us who have not been lucky. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, no, I think adult sexuality has always been, you know, a hidden thing. It's not, you know, that's why the Kinsey Report was important. He actually got people to be honest about their sexual experience. And when you're talking about adult sexual experience, I think it is helpful to study that. But it's not helpful. I don't think it's appropriate to say that that it's preferable that children, that we see children as being sexualized really from infancy.
Yeah.
You know. Well, that's where you cross the line for me. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't study sex. We should study sex. Now, when I was in my high school years, and this was in a religious school, Catholic school, you know, I remember, drawings being done on the chalkboard of ovaries and penises, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing, like just chalk drawings and so forth. And I'm sure they have printed materials now that do the same thing. But it was too late to tell us that is the point.
Right.
By the time we were told that stuff, the biology of it, should have been, I think, taught when we were 10 and 12.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree
right.
with that. Yeah.
That's the right time to tell that. You can't wait till somebody's 15 and 16. It's too late. And it much less 18, you know. And we have to be willing to talk about this stuff. And our reluctance to address the taboo topic of the sexualization of our children. All of us will be sexualized in our upbringing as we grow older. And it does happen before we're 21. You know, sexualization doesn't wait until you're 21. It happens in various ways, you know, since you were an infant, but in appropriate ways. It's
right.
not appropriate for an adult to try and give a infant or a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old a climax to test whether or not, you know, how fast they sexualize. That's not appropriate.
That's disgusting, and that is called nepophilia.
Sure.
That's called nepophilia. I have that in front of me because I lost that paper when moving my office upstairs, but I just looked it up again on Wikipedia, and that is called nepiophilia, and that is for infants, 0
right.
to 3. Or those under the age of 5.
Right.
And then you have hebephilia, which is defined as individuals with a primary exclusive sexual interest in those that are 11 to 14 years old,
right.
And then prepubescent. Okay, that's from the DSM-5. But the point is, it's a disgusting practice in my mind I had a phone call like that, Bill, not long ago. where someone had asked me about, infants, that they were quite sure that she had been abused in her infancy.
Yes.
And I said, well, how do you know this? I mean,
yes.
What gave you the idea of this? She says, I'm having flashbacks. And I said, in infancy? She said, well, I know that I'm very strange around young children, infant children from 0 to 3 years old or whatever. She says, I know that I get strange feelings. I know that I'm afraid to touch them. And I know that I'm having nightmares, and I had to give her the name of a psychiatrist because she was just going on. And she was absolutely serious. This was no prank call. She started to cry on the phone.
Yeah.
And she said that I know that I was touched as a child. And I said, well, what do you think happened to you? She said, well, I know that I wasn't entered, otherwise I'd be damaged inside because as such a small child, unless even with a pinky, I would still be in trouble. She said, but I do believe that I had a penis against my mouth. She said, I believe that. And she said, you know how children many times they have their tongue sticking in between their lips. You know, they're drooling a little bit. Some babies do. And she said, I'm sure that I was being, someone was molesting me that way. I know it. And fondling me. And she said, it's come out and more is coming out. And I said, well, you can't do that alone.
Yeah.
You have to be with a trained person who understands child abuse. And who can help you as these flashbacks are coming out? Did I hear another voice, or am I hearing things in my head?
No, I just signaled across the room that I wanted to make sure we were still being heard, and we are. Christina's hearing us. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. So, but anyway, yes. And she was very, very serious and very upset. And I said, it's even hard for me. And I gave her the name, which I just gave you. Of people who would be sick enough to touch an infant, like that. And
that's what I'm saying. Our society agrees that sex between an adult and a child is always illegal. And it has different names and different, ages. The names change, but everything that's sexual between an adult and a child is an illegal act. And so, obviously, it breaks our law. If it breaks our laws, it's immoral and illegal, right? It's illegal anyway. But that doesn't mean that children don't have sex with each other and don't have a sexual experience long before they are themselves adult ages. They're going to have typically quite a few in their teenage years, and maybe some. In their younger years, I'm thinking of the little games that we played because out of our interest in the differences in our bodies, you show me mine and I'll show you yours, playing doctor or whatever, when we were very young. And that's a natural thing for a child. Maybe, I think I was about 6, maybe, when I did that, something like that. To a certain age, you're going to do that. And that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. In fact, it means that you're probably healthy. You're healthy enough to ask the question, why am I different and how am I different? That's not something to be feared. But it would be terrible if that introduction was made by an adult who said, here's my body and here's yours, little girl, by an adult male. That's wrong.
Right.
That's not out of the interest of the child. That's out of the need, the sickness of the adult. And that's the difference.
That's why it's so important, Bill, for us to start speaking to our children at a very, very early age about their bodies. Okay? And this is what I'm trying so hard to get across to parents when I go out and speak, because they do have questions. Little boys know that they have a penis and so forth, and little girls know that they are different than little boys many times, and they do play these games. And many, many, many children do that. I was already abused by the time I was 6, so I wasn't going to play any games, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just that That's common and that's normal, as you say. But it's the adult's job. It is the parent's job, and I put it that way too, to start introducing your children about their bodies at a very early age. You could be 2 years old. You're giving your child a bath. Many times the child will start asking questions first. Mommy, what's this? Mommy, what's that? You know, and so you answer in a way without shame. You have a head, you have a nose, you have a shoulders, you have breasts, you have a penis, so you have a vagina, you have knees, you have toes. You go all the way down and without any change in tone of your voice.
Right.
And then the child understands and learns, and it's nothing to be ashamed. It's just under the body part, okay?
Right.
And then when they get a little older, of course, there's going to be different questions because maybe their own body is starting to wake up a little bit. Maybe they're cleansing themselves. They're older. They're taking showers, say 5, 6 years old. They're taking showers in their body, and they're rubbing themselves, cleaning themselves, and they're starting to get, you know, little sensations, whatever, something different. They just know it's different. They might ask a little more questions. They might, certainly by the time they're 8. And so then you can certainly tell them age appropriate as you go along as they develop.
Yeah.
And then by the time they're a teenager, there's no surprises.
Right.
You know, in fact, they know a lot by the time they're 11, you know, so there's no surprises. And this is something that needs to be done for their own good. This is the parents' job. So darkness to light has groups all over the place. And if people look that up, they just type in darkness and then to light, they have their groups. And
actually,
this way.
It's even easier than that. They can just type in URL D2L, the letter D, the number mm-hmm. 2, and the letter L, and it'll
there
take them to the Darkness to Light website. And it is a great group. And they're all over the country. And if you don't have a Darkness to Light chapter near you, but you're willing to put together a small group of adults in sort of a workshop-sized group, they'll send people out to do the teaching, into your community, mm-hmm. and they'll bring materials, and they usually do a couple hours and then take a break and maybe a couple more hours, you know, depending on the need, but they leave things behind, and it's all about prevention and how to intervene. But it's all prevention and intervention information that's given to adults so that when the darkness to light people leave, the adults are empowered themselves to understand the issues and how to deal with them and how to recognize them even.
That's right.
It's a great group. It's a great group.
And in today's society, and people are starting to cooperate more. They are starting to listen more. Now we need to get them to become proactive, and that can be starting at home, okay? And then we also need to for the children to know, and if the school system would work right with this, that if you're having problems at home, you know, it's okay to go to the nurse or to the social worker, whichever you prefer, and talk about what's happening. See, kids are always so afraid of what's going to happen if they tell. And unfortunately, so often, most of the times they don't tell because they are so afraid. The ones that nurture them are the ones many times that are abusing them. But we have to try and get it through our kids' heads, and we need for the schools to work with us. Other countries, they do that. They do that.
Right.
And you know, the United States is behind in a lot of different things. We're very uptight about our bodies.
Very uptight.
Yeah, I'm not saying that people should walk around nude exactly. But but they are uptight about their bodies. And the parents are uptight talking to their children, you know, about the sexuality and about sex in general and so forth and what to expect and so forth and what's right and what's wrong, you know.
Right.
In the bathing suit area, they always feel comfortable when I say the bathing suit area. And but this is their job as a parent to keep their child safer.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, too, to make them know that don't let your children ever walk alone. So often there are people out there that are just looking for the child who is walking alone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they will grab that child. And that
mm-hmm.
child will be gone for God knows how long, or maybe forever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's summertime now, and kids are out there. They're out there, you know, doing sports, and or they're out in the parks or out swimming. The pedophiles go where children go. That's just the way it is. And they seek them out. They seek them out, whether it be through employment, that's in the school system, okay? And that's why I always say go to the nurses or go to the social workers. Or they in anything that has to do, youth activities of any kind, even in the Christian youth activities, we've spoken about that, you know, pedophiles go where children go.
Yeah.
They have to
that's
be
right.
taught. They
that's
have
right.
to be taught about pedophiles.
Right.
They just simply do. Yeah.
Well, and that's where reports like the Kinsey Report are really important. And as I say, they may have crossed some lines. And I agree with the woman who's done the documentary that I'm uncomfortable with how some of this research was done. And even that it was done, it was unnecessary. But the bulk of the information that comes out of it is about adult sexuality, and we are really prudish and scared. You know, think of it as a taboo to talk about our own sexuality. We talk about sex all the time. We love sex. We love the prurient parts of sex. We use sex in lots of different ways, you know, to encourage people to watch certain TV shows or go to certain movies or to buy certain products, you know, or wear certain clothing or whatever. We use it all the time, but we don't really talk about sex. We only talk about the you know the use of sexual objects, for example, rather than our own sexuality. I guess
that's right.
We're still very uptight about it.
Yep, they're afraid to touch that subject, and you know what? The kids are the ones that suffer because a lot of times they get themselves in situations where they shouldn't be, and it's because of lack of education. And,
well,
and this is why the parents have got to stop being afraid to talk about sex to their kids and about the perverts, the pedophiles that are out there. And let me tell you something. If a guy, I'm going to say this again, if there's a man or a woman, and remember out there, yes, there's more male pedophiles, but there's an awful lot of female pedophiles, too. It's almost the equal, almost. You have to understand that if you have a barbecue, we all barbecue this time of the year, okay, and we have people over, we go places, if there's someone, an adult, who is spending too much time with the children, watch out. That's a red flag. Adults can certainly spend time with children, but they should want to be with their peers. They should be with the people their own age. Yes, go over, say hello to Johnny. How will you do, Johnny? Throw the ball to Johnny a little bit, but that's it. Then go back to your peers, okay? This is, you know, watch out for people who want to babysit your children too much. Oh, you work so hard. I'm not working as much. I'll gladly take your kids to the ball game, take them to the park, whatever. There's red flags.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are if there are people out there who are, you know, adults who are spending too much time with children, then I suggest that you just keep your eye out because they could be a pedophile.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, let me tell you something, Bill. In the summertime, all the abuses do go up. They're not going down. They're going up. Physical abuse especially is going up, which is one of the main things that I'm going to be speaking about because the teachers are supposed to be the mandated reporters and the nurses and so forth. And I want people to understand what to look for because our children deserve better. They deserve happiness. They deserve love. They deserve the proper direction. And they need to be safe. And so we need to make, you know, the public aware that if you see a child who's walking with their head held down, they're not making eye contact. Say it's 85 degrees out and they have on a long sweater or long sleeve shirt. That kid might be covering bruises, okay? If a child is acting too much in a sexual way, it's coming out with filth out of their mouth, using body parts and maybe even, you know, dancing strange, you know, just acting weird. They're probably seeing things at home that they shouldn't see, or maybe they're being abused themselves. So watch out for all of these things. And on our resources page, which I many times mention, on the website, www.NASCA, that's NAASCA.org, under the resources button, there's a menu that drops down, and it tells you what to look for with sexual abuse. Left-hand side for the younger kids, right-hand side for the prepubescent and teenagers. Very, very
important. It's the first link under the resource button. Tell people
right.
that when you drive it.
Yes. Well,
the first link.
Yes, and it is.
Yeah.
And so they have to learn these things. If we're going to turn our society so that our children are safer, if we're going to make that dent in the statistics that I want so badly to happen, Bill, if we're going to do that, then we need smarter adults.
Right.
We just simply do.
But I also want people to know how many adult survivors of child abuse have we talked to, and I've never, you know, and we know thousands and thousands of them, I guess, between the two of us.
Yeah.
I have never heard one of them say, but it was okay with me that it happened. Not one.
Never.
I've never heard that.
Never.
So if we really want to look at the issue and you want to talk about sexualization of children, well, come to us who have been touched in our early age, who have been sexualized in our early age, and ask us whether it was okay or not. Almost none of us will ever say, it was okay with me. And I don't regret that it happened. Most of us are going to say it was a terrible experience. It became the most embarrassing and a shameful thing that ever happened to me. It affected the rest of my life. I was deeply emotionally scarred because of it. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. These are the things you're going to hear. And I don't remember anyone ever saying that, you know, when I was sexually molested when I was young, it was okay, and it never bothered me. I've never heard them say that.
And they never will either, okay, because they know. They know what they went through, and let me tell you something. We don't just get over it. You don't just get over it. You have ruined that child's life. And think of all those children out there who have been ruined. And they go through life, they make all kinds of mistakes, they cut themselves, they turn to alcohol and drugs like you and I did, you know, they all kinds of things, trouble with relationships, the list goes on and on and on and on of how it affects us. We don't trust anyone, there's just so many things. You know, so yeah, you out there who go around and abuse children, shame on you, and you belong in jail.
Yeah. Well, we had a funky kind of show, different kind of show tonight, Carol, but we're coming to the end of the 90 minutes, and I just want to thank you for hanging in there and having called me on my regular phone, and that's the way we were able to do the show, because apparently only the host was able to connect tonight, and a couple of people have been in the chat room, you and Chris Brazil, but other than that, we've apparently had a problem with Blog Talk tonight, not us. The Blog Talk Radio being able to run in its normal configuration. So thank goodness we didn't have a special guest tonight. I hope they fix it because we have a great special guest tomorrow night.
Yep.
And I would feel really bad if we, you know, weren't able to have our normal show and the panelists and be able to provide him with a platform to talk about the important topics that he's going to bring to us. And, of course, this is the author of the materials that became the foundation of what we know as the ASCA organization at ASCASupport.org, A-S-C-A, support.org, standing for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, ASCA.support, ASCASupport.org is their website. And their main, and this gentleman was one of the founders of the group that started ASCA, and that is the Morris Foundation. And the Morris Foundation is out of San Francisco, and Patrick Gannon, who's our guest tomorrow night, wrote, he's a doctor, you know, PhD, he wrote a book that was used as the basis for the actual manual that ASCA uses. And the manual's name is Survivor to Thriver. and it's pretty well known. It's a free download from the Ask a Support website to use it, and it lays out 21-step program of addressing different issues that are used around the country with about 80 or 200, somewhere in there, groups existing that use the same process. So it's one of the groups that we can recommend you can get in touch with if you're interested in either finding a meeting that might be near you or starting one, because you can facilitate your own meeting and ask for support will help you do that. Anyway, Patrick Gannon, tomorrow night's special guest. I hope everything goes well for him.
But,
so
you know what, Bill? Listen, we always do well together, too. So we got a little information out there. But
oh, yeah.
I do hope that tomorrow goes well, too. And someone was trying to be through twice. It could have been Valerie. I don't know.
No idea. Yeah.
No.
We can't tell. But so anyway, we're going to wrap the show up now. I want to thank Carol. I want to thank Chris. I want to apologize to other people who tried to get on the show and maybe weren't able to. Hopefully some people maybe listened and the show actually got recorded. We won't know until after the fact. But we were here, and Carol and I had a great time. So thank you for being with us. You can join us any one of six nights a week, every night except Saturday night, and we'd be delighted to have you at 8 o'clock Eastern and 5 o'clock Pacific in the same place on the Blog Talk Radio Network for Stop Child Abuse Now, and which is all sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse at NASCA.org. Thanks, Carol, for being here. I'm going to try and play the theme music, and assuming that it plays, we'll get out of here. Here we go.
All right.
And God bless you. God bless the children of the world. God bless adult survivors of child abuse.
Thank you. God bless you, too.
Thank you. Well, it shows that it's playing, but it didn't play, so I don't know what happened.
We'll live one night without it.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, Carol. God bless. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Ha ha ha.